Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 5th, 2017. Let's begin with some of today's top headlines. The first headline reads, Suburban Express, UofI looks to further restrict bus company. Backlash continues for shuttle provider after insulting comments. This article is written by Julie Worth and is based out of Champaign. University of Illinois officials are investigating how to further limit a controversial Champaign to Chicago shuttle service from operating on campus property. Meanwhile, Attorney General Lisa Madigan has subpoenaed records from Suburban Express to determine whether the company's policies and practices violated the Illinois Human Rights Act. Suburban Express came under fire over the weekend for what UofI officials called offensive, bigoted, and insulting statements about Chinese students in an email advertisement to its customers traveling during the holiday season. Among a list of reasons to use the service was this: you won't feel like you're in China when you're on our buses, a reference to the UofI's nearly 6,000 students from China. The UofI received almost 100 complaints about the email over the weekend, according to campus spokeswoman Robin Kaler. Top UofI officials later condemned the ad in a message to campus and emphasized that the university has no business relationship with Suburban Express, adding that the company's buses are prohibited from picking up or dropping off passengers on university property. Suburban Express responded with two statements with alternate explanations for the comment. The first said the large number of international students, including many from China, place a variety of burdens on domestic students. We agree that having a healthy mixture of different cultures and ethnicities is valuable, but we're not comfortable with the idea of selling our university to the highest foreign bidder. The second statement, forwarded by owner Dennis Toppen, T-O-E-P-P-E-N, to UofI officials Sunday afternoon, was more apologetic. It said the ad was merely pointing out that Asian students had stopped using the service after a 2013 incident in which the company was accused of racism unfairly in his eyes. We apologize for our insensitive statement, and we hope to do a better job of unifying the campus community in the future from our office in the heart of campus town, the statement said. Madigan says, I am concerned. The State Human Rights Act states that public accommodations cannot be denied to a person or group of people based on factors including age, race, color, sex, religion, national origin, sexual orientation, and gender identity. I'm concerned that this advertisement may reflect that Suburban Express is discriminating against potential customers, Madigan said in a press release. The company has 30 days to respond to the subpoena. Student Senator Sam Leroy on Monday praised UofI officials for their quick response and for calling out Suburban Express, not just for this incident, but what truly is a long history of harassing students, quote-unquote. But he noted that he still sees Suburban Express shuttles dropping off students directly in front of UofI property, including the UofI Ice Arena. The company's website lists four pickup locations on campus. It certainly gives off an ambiguous impression, Leroy told Chancellor Robert Jones at a Senate Executive Committee meeting Monday afternoon. Kaler said some of the company's pickup locations are on city streets, including at 4th and Armory in Champaign and on Illinois Street in Urbana, in front of the Illinois Street residence halls. A number of major thoroughfares cut through campus, Jones said, and we don't have control over city of Champaign or Urbana streets. But Kaler added, we're working on seeing if we can do something about that. The shuttles also pick up students in front of Altgeld Hall on Wright Street, which is owned by the university. Kaler said the university technically can't prevent someone operating a vehicle from using a university-owned street, but it's reviewing its policies to see what can be done. My whole concern is that the university does everything possible to make sure that there's no connection between Suburban Express and the University of Illinois, Leroy said. The page of shame. Leroy and other students take umbrage at the company's quote-unquote page of shame, where it posts the names of students who have allegedly violated the company's policies, along with their addresses, phone numbers, and email addresses, and in some cases comments about their families or mental status. He said it amounts to cyberbullying. The page was no longer available Monday evening, but a cache listed this description. Think of this as a review site, where we review what we consider to be bad customers. Other merchants, we think you should think twice before doing business with these individuals, or at least require cash payment. In 2013, Toppen, T-O-E-P-P-E-N, the owner again of Suburban Express, sued 126 students in small claims court in Ford County for violating the company's terms and conditions, such as printing out and sharing multiple copies of their online tickets, using tickets on the wrong date, or altering the dates on printed copies. After a backlash from U of I students, many of the claims were dropped and others were refiled in Champaign County, where students would have better access and representation by student legal services on campus. "It's been a very long and unpleasant situation," Kaler said. "I don't go a month without getting a call from a student saying, 'Oh my gosh, I've been put on this wall of shame. What am I supposed to do?'" The company is also a habitual offender, quote-unquote, of U of I policies banning commercial advertisements from classrooms and other campus property, she said. "They'll go out and put things in classrooms, so we've been diligent about taking down ads, and we send them a cease and desist order," she said. Kaler said the campus is reviewing its policies to see if it has some recourse when a company or an organization behaves so inappropriately, to send a clearer message to our university community that we're not associated with them and that they ought to use caution when dealing with that company. Suburban Express's second statement on Sunday blamed a handful of quote-unquote cheaters for amplifying complaints about the company on social media. It said customers who wrote bad checks, used counterfeit tickets, or reversed their credit card charges after using the shuttle service had cost Suburban Express and its customers thousands of dollars over the years and should be held responsible for their actions. The next headline reads, Central High School Expansion, PACA to make its final plea. Group's effort to save Manchin goes to council tonight. This article is written by Tim Mitchell and is based out of Champaign. With the hours ticking away until the Champaign City Council seals the fate of an old mansion needed by Unit 4 for the expansion of the Central High School campus, preservationists made one last push to save it. On Monday, Preservation and Conservation Association spokesman and former Urbana Mayor Todd Satterwhite, that's T-O-D, last name S-A-T-T-E-R-T-H-W-A-I-T-E, called on the City Council to grant the Burnham Mansion local landmark status tonight against the recommendation of the Champaign Plan Commission. Such a status could prevent Unit 4 from tearing down the mansion. The school district intends to use the site for parking. "Do we as a community want a nationally qualifying historic residence to continue to grace Church Street as it has for the last 130 years, or do we want a parking lot?" Satterwhite said. But if the building isn't awarded landmark status, Satterwhite said, PACA would like to work with Unit 4 to find an alternate location for parking. "We're asking that the school district appoint someone to negotiate with us to find a reuse for the house," PACA President Alice Novak added. "So we are hopeful that will happen." Satterwhite said he spoke by phone Monday morning with Unit 4 School Board President Chris Klappel about a possible partnership. His reaction was, if PACA wanted to lay a proposal at their feet, they would consider it, Satterwhite said, but they don't want to work with us. Satterwhite said he spoke with three of the property owners on the block bounded by Lynn, Church, Elm, and Park Streets, which is east of the Burnham Mansion. "There are a couple of apartment buildings, an office building, and a vacant lot," he said. "The property owners that I talked to didn't rule out selling them. They didn't want to put a specific price on their properties. They all said they had not been contacted by Unit 4. Satterwhite denied a statement by Unit 4 legal representative Pat Fitzgerald that the district had offered PACA the opportunity to move or salvage the mansion and two other buildings set for demolition and had not received a response to the offer. Satterwhite said PACA did respond with a letter on September 15, 2016, and delineated some of the difficulties with moving structures to begin with and said the structure is a lot better off where it is rather than moving it somewhere else. He said it would take an engineering feat that is pretty tricky to move the mansion. It would involve moving a power line and light poles and cutting trees. It is much easier to move a parking lot than it is to move a historic structure. Satterwhite said the school district could sell the mansion, find an apartment owner or apartment manager who would like to buy it and market as apartments. "There's a real market for apartments near downtown Champaign, and people enjoy living in historic homes," he said. The next headline reads, Racial Disparity in Traffic Stops. Urbana Officials Search for Cause. This article is written by Natalie Wickman and is based out of Urbana. Some Urbana City Council members disagreed Monday on the cause of a racial disparity shown in a new city data in New City data, excuse me, among Urbana Police Department traffic stops between July 1st and November 20th of this year. The data presented by UPD crime analyst Melissa Haynes, that's H-A-Y-N-E-S, last week, said black drivers were 66% more likely to be stopped by police than expected, given the makeup of Urbana's population. Haynes said that percentage is consistently higher than for other racial groups. It was up from 62% for UPD stops during the first 6 months of 2017. Alderman Eric Jacobson, J-A-K-O-B-S-S-O-N, said he thinks implicit bias is one factor that contributes to the disparity. UPD recently implemented implicit bias training for officers, according to Chief Sylvia Morgan. We all have the tendency to like and trust people who are like us, and we have to overcome that, Jacobson said about implicit bias. He also noted how the diversity of a police force can have an impact. Alderman Dean Hazen, H-A-Z-E-N, said his experience in the policing field showed him that the disparity in stops stems from economics more than implicit bias from officers. Every human being on earth has implicit bias, Hazen said. This is deeply about economics. We have too much disparity in income in this country. It's so radical. Resident Darrell Cruz, that's K-R-U-S-E, and Darrell is D-A-R-L-E, Darrell Cruz, spoke to the council about his review of the data, saying the traffic stop racial disparity seems to be the product of which streets the UPD selects to enforce traffic laws. He proposed that Morgan review less policed areas of similar traffic volume and accident rates to the ones most policed now to see if they're over or under policed. The goal is to provide traffic enforcement at equitable levels throughout the city based on traffic volume, conditions, and accident rates alone, Crew said. Not the racial density of the drivers, calls for service, crime rates, or a specific neighborhood. Mayor Diane Marlin was open to Cruz's suggestion. I think the key in our way forward is looking very closely at the geographic location of stops, as well as our own internal policy, Marlin said. Alderman Jared Miller said he agrees with her. Morgan said each officer is trained to patrol their beat areas and address traffic violations as they see them. We don't say, you never stop someone at this intersection or always stop someone at that intersection, Morgan said. And now let's take a quick look at our weather forecast for the next week. This is provided to us by Greg Soulet. That's S-O-U-L-J-E. His first name is Greg, G-R-E-G, Greg Soulet, and his column on the weather front. Today, 39 degrees, windy and much colder, mostly sunny, west wind 20 to 30 miles per hour, gusty. Overnight, much colder, partly cloudy, low 21, west wind diminishing 10 to 20 miles per hour. Wednesday, the high will be 36, the low will be 24, partly sunny, cold with a few flurries, perhaps a mixed sprinkle. Northwest wind, 8 to 16 miles per hour, chance of precipitation, 30%. Thursday, the high will be 31, the low will be 19. Partly sunny, continued cold with a few flurries and spots late. Chance of snow is at 30%. Friday, the high is 30, the low is 21, mostly cloudy, cold with a snow shower or two and spots early and late. Chance of snow increasing to 40%. And Saturday, the high will be 29, the low will be 18. It will be partly sunny and cold. And now let's look at top of the morning. Something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. That's R-O-S-S-O-W. On Tuesdays, we'll introduce the kids behind High School Confidential. Today, Heritage's Courtney Stewart, that's Courtney, C-O-U-R-T-N-E-Y, Stewart, S-T-E-W-A-R-T, Courtney Stewart of Broadlands. The 18-year-old's Twitter and Instagram handles, at Courtney, that's uppercase C, at Courtney, underscore 911, and at Courtney Stewart, 911, all lowercase, respectively, hint at her ambitious career plans. The ultimate goal is to become a homicide detective, Stewart said, and one day go into the FBI. Stewart is off to a good start, completing a year's worth of classes at Parkland College before graduating high school. On Thursday, she'll get to show Heritage in all its glory when she takes over our Snapchat account. Follow along by searching for News Gazette on the app. And here's some information about our online audience. What was trending last week at newsgazette.com, which in a 7-day period ending Sunday saw 1,172,542 page views? The three top stories. 1. Monticello teen who died in I-72 accident identified. 2. Trio face weapons charges after gun fired out of car in Rantoul. Seven schools have confirmed cases of whooping cough in Champaign County. The three top stories: 1, Nelson transferring from Illinois; 2, Illini left in foul mood amid first loss; and 3, U of I's footballs, Watson, Meganson, intend to transfer. The three top videos: 1, Underwood, this team continued to fight; 2, Collins, best of the bunch for November 27th; and 3, Nichols, were not at State Farm anymore. The three top photo galleries were 1, Faces of Winter, 2017 boys basketball; 2, high school girls basketball, St. Joseph Ogden versus Tuscola; and 3, Faces of Winter, 2017 girls basketball. And now, a look at our history, area history, in 1917. Owing to poor telegraph service in Urbana, it was declared that the remains of William Mann, M-A-N-N, who died at the county farm the previous Thursday, were not shipped from Urbana to Danville, Pennsylvania, until that Tuesday. Relatives of the man had anxiously awaited the arrival of the corpse for days before it was sent, owing to the miscarriage of a telegram sent by Urbana undertaker E.H. Renner to a counterpart in Pennsylvania. The Western Union Company had recently withdrawn its operator from Urbana, and all messages were now relayed by telephone to Champaign. In 1967, Wayne A. Johnston, 70, president of the University of Illinois Board of Trustees and veteran Illinois Central Railroad executive, was found dead in his suburban Flossmoor home. The Urbana native was found seated in a chair in his bedroom by his housekeeper. In 2002, the Illinois Senate confirmed Governor George Ryan's appointment of Thomas Lamont to fill the rest of Chairman Gerald Shea's term on the U of I Board of Trustees. Shea had announced the previous month that he would retire effective December 31st. Lamont joined the board in 1991 and was serving a term that expired in January of 2003. And now let's read Jim Dye's column, Rhetoric Meets Reality, Wounded Runner on Run versus Angry Dems, Alienated Republicans. The rhetoric of October has become the reality of December, much to the regret of Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. The question is, what does that portend for March, 4 months from now, and November, 11 months from now? If worst comes to worst for Rauner, he can look back to a fateful day in September when he signed legislation requiring taxpayers to pay for elective abortions as the source of one of his problems. "I'm announcing that I'm signing House Bill 40, Rauner said at the time. "I'm being true to my values and my views. I've always been true to those. I have to make a decision. I have to do what I believe is right for the people of Illinois, and I have to be consistent with my values." Even by the slippery standards of political rhetoric, it's hard to imagine that's the truth and the whole truth. If it really was nothing but the truth about his well-known pro-choice position, why would Rauner have told Chicago Cardinal Blase, B-L-A-S-E, J. Kupich, C-U-P-I-C-H, Kupich, that he planned to veto the controversial legislation? Rauner's decision to sign the bill sparked widespread anger among niche supporters who consider abortion to be what it is, the lawful taking of an unborn human life, and media commentators who thought he had shot himself in the foot. Since his election, Rauner rightly blocked bloated Democratic budgets and vetoed an income tax increase. He pushed for pro-business, pro-growth reforms. But then he got in bed with Democrats on an issue that is explosive to his conservative base. He's poison to that base now, and so is his money, wrote Chicago Tribune columnist Kristen, K-R-I-S-T-E-N, McQuarrie. That's M-C-Q-U-E-A-R-Y. Poison comes in the diminutive form of Republican State Representative Gene Ives, a 53-year-old West Point graduate and former military officer from Wheaton. Ives, who formally announced her candidacy Monday, wasted no time launching a vitriolic attack on Rauner. She questioned his manhood. "Is our governor really a girly man?" as well as his loyalty to regular voters. "We were promised a conservative reform governor. Instead, we got an Ivy League gender studies professor," Ives said. Ives said, referring to him as Benedict Rauner. Despite her language about Rauner's alleged loyalty to the political ruling class, what Ives really is outraged about is his decision to sign the abortion bill. No matter what her rhetoric about running for governor, Ives's real goal is to see Rauner lose, whether she defeats him herself in March or helps the Democrats do it in November. What Iva seeks to do is clearly not beyond reach. She'll have her hands full in the March primary defeating the governor. After all, he has the money and is the incumbent. But she can play a key role in defeating Rahner in November by persuading her hardcore abortion opponents that it's better for the GOP's conservative wing to have a Democrat in the governor's office than a Republican like Rahner. Rahner, of course, is a conservative, but he's an economic conservative whose real goal is to fix the state's desiccated economy and effectively bankrupt finances. That's not the case with Ivas and the social conservatives. Somewhat like the abolitionists of yesteryear, they live and breathe opposition to abortion. They aren't many of them as a percentage of the population, or there aren't many of them, excuse me, as a percentage of the population, but there are enough to beat Rahner if they either sit out the election or vote for the Democratic candidate. Rahner only won by 142,000 votes in 2014. He had 50.3% of the vote to Democrat Pat Quinn's 46.4%. When he had a united party behind him, and many Democrats had had enough of dysfunctional one-party rule in Illinois. In 2018, Democrats who are enraged by the eccentricities of Republican President Donald Trump and motivated by Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan's plan to lay the groundwork for another legislative gerrymander in 2021 are determined to take back the governor's mansion. So Rahner has to know that he's in trouble in this solidly Democratic state and that winning requires changing the subject. He's trying to do that, stating recently that taxes are going to be the essential issue. Rahner seeks to put the focus on the Democrats' override of his veto of an increase in the state income tax and their gubernatorial candidates' unanimous support of replacing the current flat state income tax with a progressive income tax. But it will be a tough sell. In 2014, candidate Rahner was a blank slate. In 2018, he's an incumbent with a record that has generated discord in his own party and near-unanimous opposition from Madigan-led legislative Democrats who prefer the old way of doing business. The next headline reads, Springfield, bomb threat clears Illinois Capitol. This article is written by the Associated Press and is based out of Springfield. Authorities are letting people back inside the Illinois State Capitol after a bomb threat forced the building to be evacuated. Dave Drucker, D-R-U-K-E-R, spokesman for, or Dave Drucker, I think it's Drucker, D-R-U-K-E-R, spokesman for Secretary of State Jesse White, said the office's police force evacuated the building after the bomb threat was phoned in at about 2:30 p.m. Monday, but no bomb was found and the building was opened again a few hours later. The next headline reads, Douglas County, fourth hopeful, files for sheriff. This article is based out of Tuscola and is written by Tim Mitchell. A fourth candidate has entered the race for Douglas County Sheriff. Edward Wilmore, that's W-Y-L-L-M-O-R-E, of Tuscola, submitted a petition to challenge incumbent Fred Galey, G-A-L-E-Y, of Tuscola. 4 years ago, Wilmore lost to Galey, 4,203 votes to 1,766 votes. Wilmore ran as a Democrat that time, but he switched to the Republican Party platform prior to this election. Wilmore retired from the Douglas County Sheriff's Office in 2011. In addition to Wilmore, Galey faces primary challenges from longtime Douglas coroner Joe Victor of Tuscola and Douglas Sheriff's Sergeant Joshua Blackwell of Tuscola. Republican incumbents are the only candidates who filed for county clerk and recorder, Judy Pollack, P-O-L-L-O-C-K, that's J-U-D-I, Judy Pollack, and county treasurer Bobby Utterback Murray. Four Republican incumbents have filed for a re-election to the Douglas County Board. Bibby, B-I-B-B-Y, Appleby, of rural Tuscola in District 2, Thomas Hettinger of Tuscola in District 3, County Board Chairman Don Munson of Arcola in District 5, and Jim Mikeworth of Villa Grove in District 6. The next headline reads, March 20th primary election, two surprises in candidate filings. Lawmaker files for Secretary of State, fifth Democrat enters 13th race. This article is written by Tom Kachik and is based out of Champaign. Dozens of additional federal, state, and local candidates filed their nominating petitions Monday to appear on the March 20th primary election ballot in Illinois. There were two major surprises, with Democratic State Senator Michael Hastings of Tinley Park filing to run against six-term incumbent Secretary of State Jesse White, saying he did it to be ready in case White chose not to run. And a fifth Democrat, Angel Sides, S-I-D-E-S, Angel Sides of Springfield, jumped to the jumped into the race in the 13th Congressional District, joining David Gill of Bloomington, Eric Jones of Edwardsville, Betsy Lonegren of Springfield, and John Ebel of Urbana. The winner will face incumbent Republican Representative Rodney Davis of Taylorville. Sides or Sidis, I'm unsure. I apologize for any mispronunciation, describes herself on social media as a teacher and activist. Among others filing Monday were T.I.O. Hardeman of Calumet City, a Democratic candidate for governor, along with his lieutenant governor running mate, Patricia Avery of Champaign. Avery is a former chair of the Champaign County Board. On the Republican side, State Representative Jean Ives of Wheaton filed as a challenger to Governor Bruce Rauner. Champaign Democrat Mike Frericks, seeking a second term as state treasurer. A Republican candidate, Jim Dodge of Orland Park, also brought his petitions to the State Board of Elections. Gary Grasso, G-R-A-S-S-O, of Burr Ridge as a Republican candidate for Attorney General, challenging party favorite Erica Harold of Urbana. Grasso is a DuPage County board member and a former mayor of Burr Ridge. Three more Democrats, Jesse Ruiz, Sharon Fairley, and Aaron Goldstein, all of Chicago, join what is now an eight-way Democratic race for the office now held by Democrat Lisa Madigan. Democratic Comptroller Susana Mendoza of Chicago for another term, Republican challenger Darlene Sanger, a former state representative from Naperville, also filed. Republican Jason Helland of Mazon, M-A-Z-O-N, for Secretary of State, and the Democratic candidates are White and Hastings. Three people, two Democrats and Republican, filed in area state representative contests. Benjamin Webb, who at one time had agreed to run for the Democratic nomination for Congress in the 13th District, filed to run in the 105th Illinois House District, where Representative Dan Brady, Republican from Bloomington, is running for another term, along with GOP challenger David Blumenschein of Normal, or Blumenschein, excuse me, of Normal. Jennifer McMillan of Decatur is a Democratic candidate in the 101st Illinois House District, where there are three Republican contenders, and Terry Davis of Mattoon filed to run as a Republican in the 110th Illinois House District against Chris Miller of Oakland. Six more people, four of them Democrats, made official their candidacy for Champaign County seats. They include Democrat Darlene Klappel, of Urbana for County Executive, Champaign Democrat George Danos for County Auditor, and former Urbana Mayor Laurel Prussing for County Treasurer. Diane Michaels of Rantoul became a Republican candidate for County Auditor, and Greg Worrell of Thomasboro became a GOP contender for Sheriff, joining Alan Jones of Rantoul. Pranjal, P-R-A-N-G-A-L, Vashaspati, a Democrat, filed to run as a candidate in County Board District 9, where incumbent Democrat Shana Jo Cruz is not running for re-election. And quickly, candidates for federal state offices. Following is a list of people who filed to run in the March 20th primary election for federal and some state offices. For a complete list of filings for state or Champaign County offices, please visit newsgazette.com. For federal offices, 13th Congressional District, Republican Rodney Davis from Taylorville, Democrats Eric Jones of Edwardsville, Betsy Lonegren of Springfield, John Ebel of Urbana, David Gill of Bloomington, Angel Sidis or Sides of Springfield. For the 15th Congressional District, Republican John Shimkus from Collinsville, Democrats Carl Sporer, that's S-P-O-E-R-E-R, of Rural Mahomet, and Kevin Gaither of Charleston. 16th Congressional District, Republicans Adam Kinzinger of Shanahan, James Martyr of Oswego, Jay DeBates of Granville. And Democrats Neil Mohammed of DeKalb, Sarah Dady of Rockford, Beth Vercolio Osmond of Ottawa, and Amy Brielle of Joliet. State offices, Governor, Lieutenant Governor, Republicans, Bruce Rauner, Evelyn Sanguinetti, Jean Ives, and Rich Morthland. Democrats, J.B. Pritzker, Juliana Stratton, those are the running mates, excuse me, Chris Kennedy and Ra Joy, Daniel Biss and Letessia Wallace, Bob Daber and Jonathan Todd, T.O. Hardeman and Patricia Avery, Terry Getz, no running mate, and Robert Marshall and Dennis Cole. And again, for a more complete listing, please visit newsgazette.com for these federal state office positions. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, December 5th, 2017. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll resume with part two shortly. Have a wonderful day.